Here's the local hometown favorite, Isaiah Ryder.
If he does that corner dunk where he takes the ball between his legs and comes up around the basket, that's his signature dunk that he made famous last year in the NCAA dunk contest.
As he's moving the shot clock, the cameraman, and the Gatorade containers, Isaiah's also an interior designer here at the Target Center. Here we go, Isaiah Ryder.
That's the one he wraps under his leg.
Isaiah is 6'5". He's not happy with the setup over there right in front of Scottie Pippen. Let's see if he asks Scottie Pippen to move. I doubt that.
Scottie Pippen got three NBA championship rings. He can't ask him to move.
Good point, Charles. Oh, between his legs. How about it, Charles Barkley? What do you think?
Oh, my God. That might be the best dunk I ever seen. That was awesome. Oh, we got a winner.
Let's see what the judges give him. Remember, the high score is the one that'll win out of all the dunks here. A 49 from the judges.
Hey, guys.
Yes, Charles.
Okay, so get that on.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to I Left My Wallet. I'm Antonio the Promise Thomas, also known as Thomas Santel, and I want to thank you for tuning in today for this special free episode with my guest, Matt Cardona, formerly known as Zach Ryder. And I decided to make this a free episode because I like putting out free episodes every few months. Maybe people who aren't subscribing here at the website to take a listen to this show or other free shows that periodically come up and listen to all the great audio content that is here on the site and to check out my show because I love what we do here on this show. We get a nice little, our own little niche. We're off in the corner of the room, just doing our own little thing, talking sports and talking action figures. Because, as you all know, Matt is a huge, maybe most notable Matt is noted for is might be collecting wrestling figures and toys. And you know that from him, along with Brian Myers, having the Major Wrestling Figure podcast. And he's not a huge sports fan, so we don't talk a lot of sports. We do have a little sports quiz in here. We do talk some training and nutrition. But this is a fun conversation. Matt is so easygoing, so relaxed, one of the happiest, nicest guys you can find in or out of wrestling. And joined also on this conversation is friend of the show and former Evolve and Chikara standout, Flex Rumble Crunch, who is also known as Sean Burke, a friend of the show who's talked toys here many times in previous episodes, which you can go check out in the archives here while you're listening to this free episode. But this was a fun group conversation with three grown men who are pretty much like grown-up 12-year-olds, talking sports, talking action figures, talking wrestling. It's wonderful. That's why I made it free, because I think you're going to really like it too. And I want you to enjoy it. So while you're enjoying this episode, also go check out all the other great audio that is on this site. Thousands and thousands of hours. If you started listening to every episode in the archives, you would never catch up, ever. That's how much audio is here on the site going back years and years and years. And I'm really glad that you took the time to listen to this show. I got another free show coming up in the next week. I got some really cool guests coming up. I've yet to record that other free show, but it's someone within AEW. Had John Silver on last month, which was a great conversation. I got one coming up with Eric Watts as well. And we got a cool and fun watch along of the 1992 Foot Locker Slam Dunk Competition. All that stuff will be coming up in the next month if you subscribe here to the Wrestling Observer audio portion of the site. Enough of me yapping and talking. You want to hear Matt Cardona. So here he is, the man formerly known as Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona. Enjoy. We met. Do you remember when we met?
I'm pretty sure we met. Like, did you guys debut at MSG?
Yes.
Yes, Matt. I was there as an extra with Brian.
Yes, you worked with Matt Morgan, right?
Yes. Yes.
That was Matt Morgan's debut as the Stuttering Giant.
Right.
And I remember. Oh, so you were there with Brian too? Okay.
Yes.
I remember talking briefly because that was our debut. And it's weird how we know so many people, but we've never crossed paths
for sure
after that time. So so going back, I just want to start with a little wrestling talk, because I love the shout out to my man Slick and Sean and I know Slick very well. He lives about, well, I used to live about 15 minutes from him, but one of my best friends in the business, along with this oaf here as well. But you said on your show last week how the Rough Rider, the leg lariat finish you got from Slick, where Slick was the man back in the day. We can get into that, but just tell the listeners here how you came upon the Rough Rider finish from Slick.
So I don't remember what show it was or where we were. I don't know if I was actually on the show wrestling or just there setting up chairs beforehand trying to get booked. I don't remember that. But I remember he hit like that jumping leg lariat, leg drop thing. I was like, wow, that's cool. And then around the same time, I saw Doug Basham was doing it.
Yep.
So I'm like, well, I can do this. And it was something you can kind of do to everybody. So I started incorporating that into my, I hate this term and I'm using it even though I fucking hate it, moveset. I started incorporating it into my moveset. Oh my God, I'm vomiting right now. You can't just,
how about
coming up my throat as I say that term.
Or your act. What about act? Like a comedian. I put it into my act.
Yeah.
So
I always loved that. And I always, I was doing it on the indies before I got signed to WWE. And when I got signed, there was somebody named Mike Taylor who was doing it. So, he was the vet there. I couldn't do it. And then, unfortunately for him, he got released. But fortunately for me, I could bring the move back.
Yeah. Yeah, I was with Mike in OVW. He teamed up with, very cool, from Hawaii.
Yes, awesome.
Who did he team up with? Tony Santarelli, was that the guy?
Right, yep. Yeah, they had a great thing going in Deep South, High Impact. And like at the time, I thought they were like the next like Hardy Boys, the next Rockers. And for some reason, they didn't get the ultimate opportunity, because I feel like they really would have connected with the fans.
Yeah, he was a great, great worker. Never met Santarelli, but worked many times with Mike. So what you're setting up, chairs before the show. We did that plenty of times. That's how me and Mark and Surratt, I don't know if you know Surratt. That's how we got our start. Really, we had all our matches against each other first. What were some of the local shows that you went to? Because we're talking what, 2002, 2003, 2004 around that time?
So I started training in September 2003, and I started training for the New York Wrestling Connection. So they were doing their own indie shows on Long Island.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just trying to get on those.
And with then, Mondo. Were you with Mondo? Did you? Yeah,
so Mondo left right as I got there.
Okay.
You know, so
okay.
I was doing my scouting beforehand, you know, like, oh, this is cool because Mike Mondo came from there, you know?
Yeah.
So,
you're like, he's in Bolin Services. I got to.
Right. I knew that he went to OVW. I'm like, all right, yeah. This is the spot, you know? Like, so yeah, I was just doing like, you know, the regular ring crew stuff for a while, selling hot dogs, I think, at one show for the NYWC. And then when I officially like got on the quote unquote roster, and met Brian, you know, I'm skipping a bunch of things, but once we became a team, that's when we started to branch out on our own, do like the PWF shows or like Jersey All Pro, just really trying to get out there because we knew, back then, like, okay, like this is great. NYWC is awesome, but I don't want to wrestle in front of my parents and friends once a month. Like I want to do this forever. I want, yeah, you know, and I get like, for some people, it's like a softball league, you know. You come to practice once a week, and you do one game or one show a month. That's cool, but that's not what we wanted to do. So I think we gravitated towards each other very early on because of that. And then when we realized we both still collected the wrestling figures, like, oh man, like that was
the bond. That was the major powers handshake. The action figures, 100%. Yeah.
Because at first I didn't like the guy. I didn't like him at all because he went away to college. So I guess he started at the school before me, like maybe so we had just graduated high school in 2003. So I guess that summer he had went there and like enrolled and took some classes, then went away to college. But I joined as he left. So I went to a community college on Long Island, went to the school. So he would come back, like, you know, Thanksgiving, certain like longer weekends. And I just didn't like him at all because he was like my same size, same age, same everything, had the same haircut. You know what I'm saying? So like he was my competition, if anything, because
yeah.
You know, I didn't break into the business thing. Oh my God, I want to be a tag team wrestler. You know, I wanted to be like a singles guy, you know? So at the time he was direct competition until I think it was Mikey Whipwreck who put us together because, you know, we looked alike and he put us in some giant group called the Rat Pack. We were just kind of like minions for some other guy. And then eventually he broke us apart and made us a team. But by then we already figured out our dirty little secret about the wrestling figures. So we were already buddies by then.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like with, me and Roselli, we were same goals. We didn't have the love. We had the love of sports, but yeah, like we wanted to be singles, but like he'd have a good match, and I'd be like, you're not jealous, but you're like you're happy for him, but you're like, oh, I gotta outdo him the next time out, and then you know what I mean. So it was that healthy competition. Back in the day there in New York, New Jersey area. That was like the heyday of, we're talking early Ring of Honor. Right. And I got, you know, I would do a show and I'd get paid 20 bucks. If I got paid 20, 30 bucks, it would all go to buying VHS tapes of like Ring of Honor, of Jersey All Pro, all that stuff. Who we mentioned Slick was the man back in those Jersey All Pro days and whatnot. You had Homicide, you had Low Key. Right. Who are some of the other, like the indie darlings or the big indie guys back then that you were looking up to?
Like, I remember like Mikey had brought in like the Dead Presidents, like Boogaloo and Lowrider, and I was like, scared to death to work these guys. You know, because you hear like these horror stories, and they were great. You know, but I thought they were gonna kick our ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Quiet Storm and Josh Daniels. I remember I was intimidated to wrestle them because like NYWC was mostly like a student school, but they'd bring in some local New York, New Jersey guys, and then some names every once in a while. So like we worked Doring and Roadkill. Like I was so fucking nervous, and I think like I blew a spot with Roadkill, and I was like, oh my God, he's gonna kill me.
Danny Doring's like the most. He's so light, like you don't even.
Oh yeah.
You know? Oh man! Wow.
Yeah, I remember we had the match, and it was like one of the bigger shows at a high school, and we were going over, and like, ooh, you could tell they didn't like that.
Did you ever do any of those Joe Panzerino, like the Super Carney shows in New Jersey?
No, like, fortunately, like I didn't really, you know, we got signed so early, like probably way too early.
Yeah.
You know, but what am I going to do? Say no, you know, like there was a WWE.com like application for a tryout. So of course I signed up, like who wouldn't, right? And they were doing a tryout before a live event house show at the Nassau Coliseum. So Brian and I, we both got called to this tryout. And I think the only thing that saved us, like looking back in retrospect, is that we wore our gear and it was matching gear.
Yeah.
You know, like tag team gear, because I would say it was 50-50 people who had never been in a ring before and people who had been in a ring. Uh-huh. So I remember like we did a bunch of like cardio drills and we had some matches on the fly and we had to cut promos, and I was not happy with my performance at all. But I thought, you know what? You know, like I got a WWE tryout at 20. I was happy with the fact, like, okay, I have plenty of time. I didn't think at all I was going to get signed from this. I thought, there's no way. Bobby Fish was there. Bobby Fish killed it. Even Tommy Dreamer was there and said something like, don't quote me, but something like, if one person gets a job out of this, it's this guy, and points to Bobby Fish.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, for sure, because he's great.
Yeah.
But we ended up getting a call like a week or so later, and I was like, oh, wow, my God. Like, I was in my third year of college, and when I say third year of college, I went to community college for 2 years, got my associate's degree, but it was all bullshit. I was just going to my parents to pay for my wrestling school. Like in class, I was like, either I was drawing up wrestling logos, drawing up gear. I cut class to go to like Toys R Us and stuff like that. It was a joke.
Oh, same, but, same here. Yeah. It took me 4 years to get through community college. So it's, you know, it's funny when I was going for my master's, when I got signed by WWE, and like, I'm the worst student, to go figure, I'm a teacher now, but like I get signed by WWE. I'm like, I'm not going to need these classes. So I like dropped out mid semester. I'm like, I'm never going to need these again. You know?
Yeah. Same here. I was in my third year. So it was like February where we got the call. But Tommy, I don't know if Tommy thought we were about to graduate or what, but he said, you know, we'll start paying you now, but come when the semester ends. So I'm thinking like, wait a minute, I'm getting paid. First of all, I'm getting $500 a week. I thought I was rich.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I quit my job as a pizza delivery boy. I said, F this. I was working at Gold's Gym as a personal trainer with no clients. I quit that. And I was living like I was like a millionaire of this $500, and I should just not stop going to the classes. Like, oh, I don't need this. So like for like 2 or 3 months, I was living the good life, baby. No job, no school, and just $500 every week.
Yeah, you start getting those checks. Hey, here's $2,000 to travel and to move, and
yeah,
you know.
I mean,
and
then I was 20 years old. I was working at a pizza place, and I was working at Gold's Gym with no clients. I mean, I basically putting back those 45-pound plates. That's what I was doing. Yeah. So to get like a $500 like check, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. Same way here. I think we've all done those horrible jobs. I got Sean here. I tried to say, like, Sean, no toy talk, but that's who you are. You guys love toys.
Yeah.
I love toys. We talk about toys all the time. Sean had a couple questions he wanted to ask you. You know, maybe some things that you and Brian don't talk about. Maybe they are. I don't know. Sean, what do you got?
Yeah, well, so you actually touched on one of them before. So you mentioned that when you first met Brian, you weren't that fond of him, right? And then it was kind of the quote unquote dirty little secret that you both collected figures that kind of connected you. How the hell did that happen? Like, how did you figure out that both of you were into the same thing?
You know what? I don't remember exactly what it was or when it was. I wish I did. People ask me this all the time, and I try to remember, but it must have been something. Maybe it was like WrestleMania 20 was that year. Maybe there was like a WrestleMania 20 like merchandise we were both looking for, or something weird like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but that's what broke it, like broke down all the barriers for us. Because at the time, it was not cool, right, to be 18 years old and collecting toys. No way. I'd go to Toys R Us, I'd ask for a gift receipt because I was embarrassed. I didn't want the cashier to know that I was buying this, you know? And then my bedroom at home, literally, like you had to open the closet doors and then they were all on display. This wasn't out and about. I wasn't proud of it at all. But once, like, I met him, and then I went to his house, and, like, he had everything all set up. I was like, oh, my God. Like, this guy's – he, like, really made me, like, go back because I was kind of, like, in hiding. And then I re-set up my bedroom with all my stuff set up. It was great.
You couldn't even talk about video games back then, or like, bro, like if you said, dude, the Rockin' Rebel was kicking your ass if you talked about toys in the locker room.
You think if I walked into that WWE locker room when I was 21, 22, and I had the bag of toys that I just got at Walmart or the vintage toy store, they would have kicked me out of the locker room and shit on my toys. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's different era. It's different era. Just different culture. And I think it's for the best.
It's better. Oh my God. Absolutely.
It's crazy how quickly that stuff changed though. Like even when I started in 2010, like, you know, problems, you know, I wasn't talking to you about action figures. It wasn't until like, I was probably in a car ride. Me and Max were going to a Chikara show, and on the way back, he mentioned something about Hasbros, and I'm like, "You collect Hasbros? I got Hasbros." Like, it wasn't until about, I don't know, 2015 or 2016 that we all kind of openly just started talking about that.
No, we talked about starting lineup figures, and then led to and then that led to other toy talk and whatnot. So, I mean, come on, look who you're talking to. I mean, I wrestled my tag team partner for 3 minutes without realizing it. So, what is this? You guys follow, Sean, I know you do, Matt, the, Junk Shop, Instagram.
Junk Shop Dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they got like the guy that helped me get to Japan, Osamu Nishimura. I popped big time because they had a action figure of him on there the other day, and they have like these obscure CZW figures and all these Japanese figures. What is this Instagram? I don't go on Instagram much, but this is one of the ones that I go to.
Yeah, I call him my Japanese figure whisperer. I believe he lives in Australia or New Zealand or one or the other. And he just has access to all these Japanese figures. So anytime I need something, I slide into his DMs. I let him know. And 9 times out of 10, he's able to find it in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. Because some of these things are pretty rare, pretty old. But yeah, it's badass figures. I just got something the other day. He created his own line, continuing one of the early Japanese figures, and he made like a Bruiser Brody. And it's not like a custom because he got the blessing of the family. It's mass produced with a limited run, and it blends in perfectly with that style of figures from the early 80s. So great Instagram account to follow if you're just looking at stuff, and also great if you want to find some stuff to buy.
Yeah, so I'm sitting in my toy room right now looking at that. That just came in for me about 2 weeks ago. But yeah, it's so cool because he's got, you know, at the very bottom of it, if you read it, it said Bruiser Brody used with permission of the Goodish family. So I look at it as really an extension of that Popey line, like you're saying.
100%, yeah.
Real cool. Really, really cool. Because you feel like he should have been in that line in the first place. Like he's the one name that's kind of missing, you know?
Yeah, and those figures, like, I mean, you compare them to figures of today, they're bad. There's no articulation. But for the time, they actually like capture the guy's likeness and stuff like that. So they're not so bad, actually.
It's pretty good. It looks like one of the Bendums or I'm looking at the Bruiser Brody one. I pop because there's a Don Fry one for any MMA fans, any you know, combat sports fans. Hickson Gracie. I didn't even know that they had Pride figures, and he was in New Japan. I'm going back. I'm scrolling down through the different things on here. It's Junk Shop Dog on Instagram. Now you, Matt, you were at that store in Japan, right? The toy store, you guys chronicled it like last year or 2 years ago. You dropped a lot of money there. Right.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of cool stuff there. A lot of those Japanese figures were there. They had some like ring worn gear, stuff like that. They even had like American wrestling figures there too. So there was like a whole mishmash of stuff. There's tapes, magazines. It was just a super cool place to be. And like, you know, I have a couple of these Japanese figures in my collection, but to actually buy them while I'm in Japan, it was great, you know. Yeah. And luckily we were able to document it and put it out there for people to see, because, you know, we're very fortunate to be able to go over there and travel and wrestle. Some people will never get to go there. So to be able to see it through our eyes, hopefully, you know, they can appreciate it on some level.
Yeah. Now, you know, back in the day, back when I was teaming with Roselli, we always get the tag of being a body guy. And I think you fit into that. I mean, you look you're bigger than ever. You're in better shape than ever. Do you ever fall into that as being known as a body guy? Or, like, I know Chris Masters and Carlito always joke about, you know, being a body guy, and you got the move set. There's that word again. But I want, that leads me into, you're always, you know, when you have a gimmick like you did, or persona like you did, or I did, kind of like a pretty boy type thing, or a Jersey Shore type thing, you got to look a certain way. So how has your training over the years changed? Because, and if it has changed at all, I don't know, because back 2003, you know, pretty much up until probably 2010, for me, it was bodybuilding, workout, eating every 2 hours, you know, blah, 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 whatnot. It's totally different now, and it's almost the complete opposite of that. For you, what you stayed in shape, ridiculous shape all throughout your time in WWE, now in Impact. What have you done to kind of change up and keep things fresh, and that to always, you know, just to stay in the great shape you are?
Yeah. So, you know, I started lifting weights in like 11th grade. You know, I'm sure I dabbled before, but like seriously consistently in like 11th grade. But I was so afraid to go into a gym. I was intimidated. So I convinced my dad to get me a Bowflex, and I was just using the Bowflex for a while until like I felt like I was confident enough to get in there. And, you know, I always made the gym part of my routine, where I get to the point where, you know, wake up, eat breakfast, go to the gym. Like, there's no debate. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to be done. Where it's just like, it's like almost like eating and breathing for me. And over the past couple of years, you know, I've really, what I love about fitness in general is that you never have learned everything. You'd always learn something else from somebody, big or small, whether it be like training in the gym or something diet wise. And you know, you see on my social media, I use that hashtag always ready. And I believe that, because, you know,
no, it's like Fred Sampson, Fred Rosser with no days off. It's like,
yes,
do something every day, man. Just, you know, yeah, be prepared.
Yeah. And you know, this business, it's, you know, it's a crazy fucking business, right? And to I'll admit, at some points I was bitter, and I'm sure if you go back to like 2012, 2013, you might see some negative tweets, you know. But like, I realized one day that being negative and being bitter, it's not gonna change my situation at work, and it's certainly not gonna make me happier at home. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I decided to, because I'm not a naturally positive person, but I tried to flip the switch on myself. You know, let's see, what things can you control? Okay, you can control your gear, right? No one's going to say you can't have good gear.
Right.
You know, you can control your gear, you can control your attitude, and you can control your physique. Nobody can stop you from training your ass off. Nobody can stop you from eating right. That's on you. You might not be the champ on TV. You might lose every match. But at least when you walk out that curtain, you look the part. And if you're asked to, you know, to go 20 minutes or to we're going to use you all of a sudden, you better be fucking ready.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I've lived my life for the past couple of years. And, you know, with Impact the other day, it was Friday. The show was Saturday. I got a text while I'm at the gym. Can you be here tomorrow? Yeah, sure. Ready to go. I hadn't wrestled since fucking September.
Yeah.
I haven't even been in a ring since September. But you know what? I say always ready. I better be able to fucking back it up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And luckily, I don't know if it's fate or what, the night before, I shaved my whole body and got 3 tans. For me, I was just getting a confidence tan. You know, what I do, I get the tan in the bed and I spray twice. I call it the triple dip. So I just did that for a little confidence boost. I was a little pale, you know what I'm saying? I nared, shaved, got all fresh, got the tan. And then by coincidence or fate, a couple hours later, I got the call to go to Impact. So.
Yeah. Dude, I went to the Performance Center as a guest coach, and I tanned. I haven't tanned, stepped in a tanning bed in 8 years probably. And I'm like, I got to, you know, G's act and T's and. So sure. What? Hey, going back, just to touch on in-ring training a little bit, what was Sean and I, like Sean went for a tryout back in 2013 to the Performance Center. And we, like, you know, we did the triple fives. We did, you know, high knees and the core, all that shit. We both trained under Bill DeMott. We both trained under Dr. Tom. And Dr. Tom was a big guy on the triple fives. Bill, you know, had his way of doing things. What was your most hated in-ring conditioning routine, whether it's the triple fives or man in the middle?
Man in the middle was hated because it was so hard, but at the same time, it was so important.
Yeah.
You need to not be able to blow up. Bill DeMott was big on that. Dr. Tom was big on that.
Yeah.
It's very important. With no gas in your tank, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You're fucked, you know? So, but what drills did I hate doing? Certainly the man in the middle. Certainly the 3 minute, like, crisscross where Bill would blow the whistle.
Oh, God.
Drop down. Oh, fuck. My God. Kill me. Oh. You know?
Yeah.
Those are not fun at all.
Yeah.
But I don't think training is supposed to be fun.
No, it's not. It's
when I go to the gym, listen, we're all guilty of taking out our cell phone every once in a while, but I try to say, no fucking phones here. Let's fucking go to work. You're not here to fucking to text or to, if you're texting during your break, you're taking your mind out of it. You're definitely taking too much rest. You know what I'm saying? It's not supposed to be fun.
Sean and I, like, I trained Sean, and we had this conversation all the time, right? Sean, tell him about, like, hey, practice for Tom Brady is not fucking fun. Oh. Practice under Bill Belichick is not fun. Practicing with Michael Jordan is not fun. And Sean played football in college, high school, right? Sean, tell him, you know,
it's exactly what you're saying, right? If you want to get somewhere, it's you know, part of that journey is putting everything you have into what you're doing. It's not always going to be fun. Sometimes, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you're going to throw up, you know, sometimes you're going to have trouble walking up the stairs the next day, but that's what you got to do to get there. Absolutely. And I that always irritated me too. People that would look at it like, well, I don't want to do this. I don't want to work out hard because I just don't have fun doing it. And it's like, that's not what it's about. If you want the results, you got to go through it.
Tell them, we're going to wrap up here in a second. Tell them about Williams, Sean.
Oh, I don't even know how we'd begin. I would equate this guy, honestly. So Matt, you trained heavily under DeMott, right?
Yes.
He was a
boxing coach at one of the martial arts places I used to go to 15 years ago or so. And he was also, what was he like? He was like a football coach.
He was my semi-pro football coach, right? So right around the time I got into wrestling, I was still playing semi-pro football. And this guy was I loved him to death, but just cold. And like, he had us, we went to this old rundown community center. He had me and Promise running up and down the stairs for just hours, until you couldn't do it anymore. And you
the warm up was hold a 45 pound plate, squat to press. So that was the warm up for a minute or 2 minutes. Then, go ahead. Tell him about the how he chose what weights we would use for the. This place was old. There were Nautilus machines. There was all that shit. Tell him.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah, it literally would just, he'd just keep loading weight on, and it wouldn't matter. It would just be like he'd keep loading weight on until you could no longer move it, and then he'd start spotting you a little bit, so you're still pushing yourself. It was crazy.
He'd put you'd be on like the leg extension. He'd put the pin in like 300 pounds, like a ridiculous weight that you could not get. He's like, it's all in your mind. It's all in your mind. And it was like, it reminded me, I don't have anything bad to say about Bill. I like Bill, but it reminded me of that type of training where you need to eat 10,000 calories a day.
I look back at that time in Deep South, and there's people who, you know, you could read it on the internet, who hated it and bury it. At the time, like there were, I remember I went home for Christmas break, and like to live a normal life, it was like, oh my God. And then I went back and I was like, the anxiety to go back to practice and I didn't want to go back. I was like, I don't know if I could do this. I don't know. If I... And then once I went back, I was back in the swing of things.
Yeah.
But Bill, he taught me. And I think what he was trying to teach everybody, besides being able to go in the ring and not getting blown up, I think he was teaching mental toughness. Yeah. And Bill taught me was invaluable, because nobody could fuck with me in this business. They can try to, but I wouldn't let it bother me. You know, it would be all bullshit in my mind, you know, and that's something that, you know, you need to have thick skin in this business, especially back then. And Bill, you know, Bill toughened us all up. So I give Bill a lot of credit for that because, you know, practice was hard as fuck. And I'm always going to be a hard gainer, skinny guy. We talk about diets and stuff like that. I remember I don't naturally, now I'm older, so now I have to do some cardio. But back then when I was 20, I couldn't do fucking cardio. No way. I'd be losing weight. But at these practices, I was just losing weight. Like, it was unbelievable that I would have to, Bill would make me go get like desserts or fast food and scarf it down in front of him to prove that I was eating.
Yeah.
You know, because I was losing so much weight. And there's a difference between being lean and being skinny. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And I was looking really, really skinny. And that's the way I look if I don't eat. I don't look like Matt Seidel lean. I look fucking skinny.
Yeah.
You know, but those practices were fucking brutal. And I remember there was usually two classes. Like Dave Taylor would train in the morning, the morning class. And then you wanted to be in Dave's class because, like, okay, well, Bill's class, let's say, starts at 12.
He was like,
only go to a certain time.
Yeah, we had Lance Storm and Bill, so we had, it was, Dave Taylor was like your Lance Storm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're in Bill's class, oh, fuck, there's no time. it's whatever, let's say it starts at 12, it's 12 till whatever Bill says.
Right.
So you can't even, like, mentally in your head be like, okay, 2 hours left. You can't because you don't know.
No, we
keep going.
But I loved it. I mean, because to me at the time, I was so naive. I thought, okay, well, this is wrestling training. This is WWE training.
Yeah.
I didn't think anything of it.
Yeah.
I thought this is it.
No, but then after a couple months, though, he gives you Iggy's on things. He knows the guys and girls that work hard, that bust their ass. And I, you know, Johnny Curtis loved them. I never had a problem with them. You know, so it's, you know, I agree with you. It fucking toughened me up. I never was in the service. I did a little amateur wrestling in high school, but it was fucking nowhere near as tough as that. And it's like, I get paid to train and, you know, jobless, contractless me a year before would have killed to be in that situation, you know? So, but I get you on the anxiety. It felt like when you went back to school after summer vacation, you're like, I'm like nervous. I'm like, I thought this went away when I graduated high school. It's like, right. You know,
it was definitely the hardest training I'd ever been involved with, wrestling wise, like just mental toughness wise. But the lessons that he taught me were invaluable. So I thank Bill so much. Now, was there a lot of weird shit that went on there? Absolutely. Should there be Dark Side of the Ring, Deep South Wrestling? Absolutely. But I fucking loved it. And it's one of the best times of my life.
Cool. Hey, this is mainly a sports show.
Sorry, guys. I don't
No, I want to. No. It's mainly a sports show. I got to touch on a little sports thing here. So before we head out, I came up with a little quiz here. Just to test your sports knowledge. There's various athletes with either Ryder in the name, Zach, Cardona, or Majors. Okay? And they can be football, basketball, baseball, soccer, hockey. Okay?
Okay, right now,
you
know, zero.
Okay, well, I'll give you an either or. I'll give you an either or. Okay.
Well, if you were offering me $1 million, right?
Yeah.
And said, can you name 5 Major League Baseball players? I'll give you $1 million. I couldn't do it.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's how little knowledge I have.
Okay. Well, I got 10 of them here. We'll go through them quickly.
I got
10
of them.
No. Well, we don't have to get through all. We don't have to do all 10 of them.
It's the entertainment portion of the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Let's start off with a curveball here. Zach Greinke. Is he baseball or is he soccer?
This is a guess. Baseball.
Yes. Ding, 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 ding. Correct. I might have to get Smart Mark to edit in some game show sounds here. Okay. J.R. Ryder later became known as Isaiah Ryder. Is he football or basketball?
Basketball?
Yes.
Wow. Ding, ding. Guess.
Yes. J.R. Ryder, not the independent wrestler from like Maryland. Okay, here's one. Javier Cardona. Is he a baseball player or a soccer player?
Soccer.
No, that's MLB, Major League Baseball.
Can't get them all.
That's all right. Here's the other Cardona. Tomas Cardona. Is he soccer or is he baseball?
I'm going to stick with soccer.
Yes, he's an Argentine. Oh, yes. 3 for 4. Okay. Johnny Majors, the brother of Lee Majors, who was the Fall Guy. That might be a little before your guys' time. Was he football or hockey?
Football.
Yes.
Yep.
Johnny Majors played for...
They're all guests.
Okay, here's a current one. Zach LaVine. Is he basketball or is he baseball?
Baseball.
No, basketball. That's a tough one. Zach LaVine. You'd think, because there's like 70 Caucasian pitchers named Zach in Major League Baseball, which is a clue for our next one. Zach Wheeler. Is he baseball or hockey?
Baseball.
Yes. Very good. All right, last one here. Current. Zach Wilson, is he hockey or is he football?
Football.
Yes.
It's
going to be a top pick in this year's draft. Very good. So that is 6 of 8. That's like 75%. Pretty
I'll
good. You should do a sports segment on your show.
See, when I was a kid, I you know, played all the sports video games. I played like in the schoolyard and stuff like that, and collected the baseball cards and stuff like that. But I thought wrestling was real, so wrestling was my sport.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and yeah. Then, like when, you know, in junior high where you had to go to practice on Saturday mornings, like, well, Superstars or Live Wire
right.
on Saturday mornings.
Oh, my God.
I can't miss that, you know?
I dropped out of – I played Little League my whole – up to the 8th grade. The only year I didn't play it, 5th grade, because practice was Saturday at 11 a.m. That's when Wrestling Challenge came on.
Right.
I couldn't miss it. I couldn't admit. I had my block. I had NWA, Wrestling Challenge, fucking ICW from New Jersey at like 8 in the morning. It was – no. Fuck baseball. No.
Yeah. Like I did wrestle in high school, but I mean, I was like the guy in the back, like practicing like Kill the World backbreakers and stuff. You know what I'm saying? I didn't take it seriously either. But I was a big backyard wrestler in high school, so I couldn't practice after school. I was booking my feds, you know.
Yeah. You're still booking your own fed because you got the Figure Wrestling Association.
Figure Wrestling Federation.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's the most ridiculous thing ever. It's like a spinoff of our Major Wrestling Brewer podcast where Brian and I, we rebook the Attitude Era in theory, like with figures, but really we're just like booking fantasy cards. And, you know, we each have 30 minutes a week to tell our cards, tell our stories. And then with the figures, we do what's called figure photography and set it up. And we did a whole season. And by season, I mean 6 months. We started in July. We had a big draft. And every week we did TVs with pay-per-views.
Wow.
And next week we have our final show, Major Fest, the final show for season one. It's like our WrestleMania. But it's been crazy. Literally, we have to book a 11-segment show every week.
And wow.
It's a lot of work, a lot more work than I thought it would be. But it's a lot of fun. And getting – like right now I'm in my quote-unquote office. And I have a figure arena permanently set up for the past 6 months with the crowd, cardboard crowd background, and the commentators table. And then I set up these figures. And I'm 35 years old, and
that's great. I love it. I love it. I wish I had that with my G.I. Joe figures when I was a kid. You know.
Yeah, dude, it's wild. Like, I'll be honest. You know, when you guys came up with that idea, I'm kind of like, all right, I don't know if I need to hear two guys sit around and book matches with their figures. But when I listen to it, it's like the way you do it and the emotion and everything you put into it, especially on your end. You know, I know you did the bare minimum Brian jokes and all that stuff, but the emotion is actually really entertaining and it's funny. Well, you know,
you guys are the top of this story. So last week I had a match. It was in a floating ring match, right? So it was Hulk Hogan versus Stone Cold Steve Austin in a floating ring match. So for the figure photography, I do have a floating like WCW Bash of the Beach ring, and I was going to do it in my pool, and I was going to do it Friday. But I got called to go to Impact, and they said, can you come tonight? I said, no, I can't make it, but I really had to go do my figure photography. I had to go home. I had to do all the figure photography for this floating ring match, and then I flew Saturday morning.
it's wild.
Hey, do you have
that are fantastic?
Do you have a Rory Fox figure? Is there a Rory Fox figure?
There is not a Rory Fox figure. Rory Fox, for those who don't know, I exposed him not for being a jabroni, but for having no under trunks and a small penis on national television. I love Rory. He thinks I did it for real. Like he thinks like JBL.
He was on Talkin'. Did you hear him when he was on Talkin' Shop?
Oh, bro, I hear him on all these interviews. Yeah. I thought we buried the hatchet about a year or so ago. We invited him down to our live podcast in Chicago. I let him get like retribution. I let him pull my pants down. Everything. And I thought we were cool. But he keeps going. And I love it. And I do want to have a match. Rory Fox versus Matt Cardona, a tuxedo match. I joke about it, but I'm dead serious. I want the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast to put on a live. We do live podcasts, but I want to do a live wrestling show, and I want that to be the main event. And you know, I love Rory. I think you know, I think that he's a little delusional. I did not mean to do this. Even if JBL told me to rip off a man's trunks on live TV, even if I tried my hardest, it wouldn't have happened.
No, there's. There's eight agents waiting to rip your match apart and each give you a different response when you get back. And the, you know, a 23-year-old is thinking about ripping a guy's testicle out. So it's
right. And like, it's not my fault that his trunks were made of fucking dust and that he didn't have any under trunks. You know, I genuinely,
it's probably those old K&H ones. Maybe
you have trunks. Usually trunks are sewn at the sides.
Yeah.
His trunks were sewn like, where the butt meets the crotch. So when it ripped, it looked like he was wearing a mini skirt with no under trunks. That's just not being professional. So Les Thatcher must not have caught him about wearing under trunks. I don't understand.
Get well, Les. I love Les. Sean and I.
I do too.
And I love Rory too. But yeah. if he wants to make this beef continue, fuck, I'll do it too. I don't give a fuck.
Money.
I'll expose him again.
I didn't see Talkin' Shop of Mania 2, so I didn't know if it happened there.
It has not happened yet. Rory, he even called me. He called me and said, hey, we can't do this at Talkin' Shop because they're just going to bury it on commentary. I said, no shit, Rory. What do you think? This is a joke, Rory. I will give this the most attention possible. When we finally figure out when the date is, I'll plug it everywhere.
Good.
Major Wrestling Figure Podcast presents Rapid Delivery Roy Fox versus Always Ready Matt Cardona in a tuxedo match. And I'm looking forward to it. Like, when I got released, people were like saying, like, what's your dream match? Who is your dream opponent? And I would say that, and they thought I was joking, but I'm dead serious. This is a decade in the making.
Yeah.
That story.
Yeah. And when this match happens, where can listeners here at the Wrestling Observer get that news on your Twitter, on your Instagram, and and where can they watch the
at Major WF Pod on Twitter, on Instagram, YouTube.com/MajorWFPod. All my social media is at the Matt Cardona, and we are launching the Major Pod Network the next couple of weeks. So the Major Wrestling Favorite Podcast, we thank our fans so much because you have you've really, you know, blown our expectations of this little figure show out of the water, and now we have a whole line of podcasts about to drop first week of February, so we're very, very excited. So we thank everybody for their support, whether they be listening or tweeting us or buying a t-shirt. It's helped more than you know, so thank you very much, guys.
Island. What's up,
Island? What's up,
Island? What you doing?
Long Island.
Long Island.
What's the matter, me?
Long Island. Long Island. Long Island.
Yo, get with that shepherd pasta.
Long Island.
Let's talk over here and see where he goes to.
Once again, it's Long Island.
How do you wanna be when you grow up?
I wanna be a super MC.
Long Island.
So let me step up the bat, attack a hit to go beyond today's rap counterfeits. Out of the heavens, August 1769, born I, won the why, with the thoughts to rhyme, till there was no longer thoughts to dream, when an unpolished demo led the limos at the age of 18, accompanied by the screams, plug one, shot up with fame like Novocaine, it made me numb, so numb I wouldn't been able to feel niggas digging in my pockets for my currency reels, but still, I made girls brown eyes blue at will,
until
my ass was no longer mass appeal. Oh shit, I guess that was all the fame I was allotted. Wait a minute,
new video.
Like a leopard, I'm spotted up in a nightclub, chilling with Khalil and Fife. I be that farmer cultivating, owning acres of mics. And I likes to make it known, Strong Island styling for a while, so do that damn.
Are you riding a spot?
Yes, I be.
Showing others they do not?
Yes, I be.
Having them told from the lie?
Yes, I be. That's my job as a super MC. I'm from Long Island, mobile, make it worth your while. If the jam needs motion, I'm the one to die.
Going beyond 90 watts.
Yes, I be.
But are you rocking it?
Yes, yes, I be.
Rocking it.
I can stress the making of loot to feed the fam while the voices impersonate the true who I am buzzing in my ear. Oh, you one of those wannabes always buzzing in my ear. You down with super MC. Stepping to me with your pleas that you got butter rhymes. Man, the only thing but about you is your spine, mad yellow. You can't rock the Mardi Gras, my mellow. Cause my stealth shows more than knowledge of self. I got knowledge of you to know you a whack and crew.
You mean whack MC?
Now a whack and crew. See, you a crew of whack niggas. You should've never tried to test these words that I man with the eye to fest. Why you saying one thing really meaning the next? You're just a contradict. Your mind's been tampered with like some holy books, but looks through the sky cause Wonder Why's here to save the day.
Are you rocking a spot?
Yes, I be.
Showing them others they do not?
Yes, I be.
Having them told from the lie?
Yes, I be. Cause ultimately, I'm letting all MCs know that what's the name of this crew?
Bayla.
The next get loose, like an alcohol scenario, rap be on the rocks. Authenticity's that missing feed and pay to join a flock of MCs. These niggas stand lower than knees, dramatized in their eyes as the ones to please. When rap kids apply violent pressure to father, brother, and son for fun to say they inflict pain. On repeat, niggas lie to mother, sister, and daughter to have sex disguised as loving in the rain. The words are more hollow than October 31st, but what's worse is to see the females switch to sexual mentality. It doesn't match with the given anatomy. Man, they'd rather be hoes like that male MC and walk around like they got nuts. I use the tits and ass like a crutch, man. The underground's about not being exposed. So you better take your naked ass and put on some clothes.
Yo, this be going out to them kids from East Mass, Amityville. To all my people out in Wine Dance, Bay Shore, see eyes in the place. Brentwood, Hempstead, all my brothers out in Roosevelt.
Long Island.
Long Island. Zach Ryder, a.k.a. Matt Cardona. This is SWB,
Appreciate the shout out on the Major Wrestling Figure podcast, bro.